Welcome to the Locked On Heat 2006 NBA Finals Rewatch. It's time to talk about Game 6, David. Dwayne Wade's masterpiece, Alonzo Mourning's huge impact off the bench, and the Miami Heat's first ever championship in franchise history. It's all coming up next.
Terry puts it up. Won't go. Rebound Wade. The Miami Heat, they've done it. They win their first championship in franchise history.
Congratulations, Miami Heat. 2006 NBA champion.
But it was our time. I really believe that it was our time.
It's one of the best feelings I ever had in my life. So I'm going to live it up. So we deserve it.
All those sounds you just heard in the introduction were from the celebration, the press conference following the Miami Heat's championship, the first ever in franchise history, celebrating on the Dallas Mavericks floor at a different American Airlines named arena. This is our seventh and final installment of the Locked On Heat 2006 NBA Finals Rewatch. To everybody who's followed along with us so far and even has gone back and watched those games along with us, thank you so much for participating. And thank you for subscribing on YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. I am Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. Thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. It is time to talk about Game 6. Finally, the legendary Game 6, the last game of the series, and the one that resulted in the Heat's first ever championship. And Dwayne Wade, going into the history books. Let's just get right into it, David. Set the stage for us.
All right. One shirt, one suit, one tie. Those, of course, are the six words attributed to Pat Riley as he would pack on his way to Dallas. He would be bringing just enough clothing for Game 6 because there would be no Game 7, at least in his opinion. The Heat were riding high, having won three straight games in Miami and looking to clinch their first championship. But before the game, Dwayne Wade spoke to ABC reporter Lisa Salters and said, "This is our Game 7 right here." They could not risk taking their foot off the Mavericks' collective throat after having lost the first two games of the finals in Dallas. The Heat would have lost whatever hard-fought momentum they had gained, and Riley would have been calling the team's hotel laundry service for a likely loss. If Dallas was a desperate in Game 6, it didn't show early on. They started off the game playing a much faster pace than Miami. Dallas's trapping defense forced the Heat into four early turnovers, and back-to-back threes by Dirk Nowitzki and Jason Terry gave the Mavs an 8-point lead early on. The Heat were still in the game thanks to the unlikeliest of heroes stepping up. The man from Liberty City himself, Udonis Haslem, was left open, and UD took full advantage. And that was almost enough. As if every Haslem jumper opened a crack in Dallas's defense, Wade would crash his way right through in the second period, scoring 12 points. Every 20-foot jumper breaking the Mavericks just a little bit more. The Heat defense, led by Alonzo Mourning, was incredible, holding Terry, Josh Howard, and Jerry Stackhouse to a combined 5 of 20 from the field. Dallas would attempt a single free throw in the period. But this wasn't the second biggest conspiracy since the assassination of John F. Kennedy. The Mavericks were simply passive, and the Heat were inspired. The Heat were up 14-0 during the 2006 playoffs when having a lead at the half, and they were up one. So that seemed to give them all the momentum. The Mavericks seemed to recognize what was at stake in the third, however, after missing 11 straight shots. And with Miami's lead up to 9, it was their turn to make a run. Nowitzki took control, getting a friendly whistle of his own, and Marquise Daniels provided an incredible boost that helped the Mavs cut the lead to 3 entering the crucial fourth quarter. The rest, to me at least, was a blur. There was no singular turning point, no dominance from any one player, not even Wade. Mourning recorded his 5th block of the game, and we struggled to breathe after that last one, walking off the court never to return. For the Mavs, Daniels kept finding a way to score, while Howard and Stackhouse found their touch for a combined 16 points in the period. James Posey hit a 3-pointer, his first basket of the game, to put the Heat up 6, only to watch as a Stackhouse 3 cut the lead to 1 with just over 1 minute left. I had no idea this game had been so close until I rewatched it, but it was Haslem again, his 17th point of the night, and Wade free throws to give the Heat a 5-point cushion with 17 seconds left in the game. But then Wade became human again. A missed 3-pointer by Terry led to Wade fouling Josh Howard with just 11 seconds left. Howard nailed both and cut the lead to 3. And Wade was fouled again, missing both free throws and with a chance to put the game out of reach. As both teams fought for the ensuing rebounds, Haslem, who else, pulls it down, but is called for a traveling violation as he fought to establish possession. Dallas would get one last opportunity with their season on the line, and Terry, who had missed his first 6 shots of the final period, took one more, this time with Gary Payton holding onto his jersey as his shot went up. The shot sailed wide, and Wade grabbed the ball tossed it high into the air, and yelled in celebration as the Heat became champions for the first time in the team's 17-year history.
Artfully recapped, David. You mentioned a lot of different things there, and we're going to get to in a ton of categories later on, including some questions, lingering questions 16 years later, about whether or not Dwayne Wade did get a friendly whistle. We're going to talk about that, whether or not Alonzo outplayed Shaquille O'Neal overall for the series. We'll get to that later on, too. One category I had not put in our notes here is role player of the game, and I probably should have because you mentioned Udonis Haslam. He was phenomenal, absolutely saving his best for last in this series, right? In Game 6, you mentioned the fact of how this was their Game 7. They were burning the boats. They were doing all the classic Pat Riley things.
Yes.
And they needed somebody like UD to step up because you look at the box score here and Dwayne Wade just overwhelmingly the best player, not just for Miami, but on the court that night. But they did get great contributions from other guys. Udonis Haslam, Gary Payton, Jason Williams made a handful of threes. Shaquille O'Neal had a decent game. Alonzo Mourning had a really good game. And so you had a lot of these smaller contributions up and down the roster, but Haslam had, what, 17 points in that game?
Yep.
Something like that. And just phenomenal for him. But that's not my big takeaway from the game. My big takeaway was just, again, it keeps going back to Dwayne Wade. Everything comes back down to Dwayne Wade. Just an absolute force, a force. And I use that word specifically because obviously it was just another great performance in an entire playoff run, not just a finals series, but an entire playoff run of great performances. And one of the great performances we've ever seen in the finals, of course. But, it's like what Spo told us on our last episode recapping Game 5. D-Wade's poise at that age, just uncanny. And it's like what Antoine Walker told us last week, that Dwayne Wade just kind of found a way to get his jumper going as this series went along. And we saw that in this Game 6, right? Obviously, he was able to get to the basket. Able to get to the free throw line a whole bunch. Again, put a pin in that. We'll talk about that later. But the jumper was going too, and he was just so forceful in this game that he was just, you could tell that message that you talked about from Pat Riley down to the players, it really resonated with D-Wade. He was the embodiment of that message. He was like, yeah, we're not playing a game 7. I'm taking this thing over. And he did. And Dwayne Wade's interview after the game sort of spoke to what motivated him to play that way. And here's the quote right here, and then I'll throw it to you, David. Quote, I don't want to say I put the team on my back. You know, we did it together. Like Coach said, like we've all been saying, it's been 15 strong. They gave me the opportunity by putting the ball in my hands to prove people wrong. When I came into the series, it was, I can't shoot. I don't know where they got that from. So I proved to them that I can shoot. And then after that, I proved I can play. And that's all I tried to do. Prove people wrong. End quote.
It almost feels Jordan-esque, right? We made the comparison before, as much as Dwayne didn't really like the comparison, but having seen The Last Dance and knowing, confirming exactly what we've known from Jordan for a long, long time, it's these perceived slights that he uses to fuel himself and motivate himself, and Dwayne going right in sync with that, saying, oh, you don't think I can hit the jumper? I'm going to hit every jumper imaginable and use that as the ultimate motivation to fuel him into an all-time historic performance, because that jumper was incredible, silky smooth, using the bank so effectively. Like, I don't know that we've ever seen, we didn't see this version of Wade again. Like, I don't think he was ever that consistently good with the jumper throughout the rest of his career. And you wonder, even as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, why didn't this translate into a reliable three-point shot throughout the rest of his career? Because there he is in year three, hitting like 20 footers, like nothing, with a hand on his face and just doing so effortlessly. But overall, though, yes, a fantastic effort from him. And I'm glad that Wade is getting his flowers and has gotten his flowers, obviously. But at the same time, like you mentioned, phenomenal performances from all the role players, whether it was Shaq just doing what he does, Zoe and his five blocks, that image of him like huffing and puffing because he just couldn't catch his breath because he was leaving it all out there, stretching somehow for an extra inch or two to try and just tip whatever shot he could and keep it away from the basket. Like, that was the ultimate great effort performance from Zoe, and he just he had given it all. He left it all out there in Game 6. There was no chance for a Game 6. I don't know that he would have been able to play in a Game 7 if it had been available to him. But, Posey coming up big. Antoine having a good game, too. So many different guys stepping up over the course. Even Shannon Anderson getting some minutes out there. That was not something I had expected to see. But, he was a great game. And conversely, on the flip side of things, I think this is, something that motivated him later on. Dirk Nowitzki really struggling in that fourth quarter. Like, he had his shot going in the second. Other than that, not really impactful. And there were a few moments like that. And you have to give credit to not just had Haslam, but the whole Miami team defense, because they Posey were doubling him in every opportunity. They played it perfectly. They challenged him, as Antoine told us, just bodying him up, getting an elbow into him, making it physical, tough for him to kind of get his rhythm, because obviously he's such a great shooter that he's able to knock that down as effortlessly as Wade was doing so. But they were making things difficult for him, forcing a tough entry pass every time he got the ball, making, you know, challenging him on the shot, and then doubling him at every opportunity. And they just forced him into a lot of bad turnovers too.
Yeah. We got a bunch of categories we're going to get to. Turning point, flashball moment, all the things that we've been doing throughout this series. But let's get to some trivia really quick.
Yes.
Couple questions here for you, David. Number one,
all right.
Dwayne Wade averaged 16.2 free throw attempts per game in these finals. Where does this rank all time in finals history?
Number one.
It does. George Mikan in 1950 is number two, 14.3. Can you guess who number two is? Or number three is? Sorry.
Number three all time.
It's Giannis in 2021.
That makes Giannis sense.
14.2, just a that hair beneath George Mikan. But D Wade, almost two free throw attempts per game more than George Mikan, just a runaway for that number one spot.
And more than even Iverson, who got a notoriously friendly whistle because he was so undersized. Jordan, who I think was the first star to really get those quote-unquote star-level calls. Like, that's a little surprising. And I know we'll talk about this a little bit later, but so I'll put a pin in any further commentary.
Last trivia question here. With recent documentaries about Michael Jordan and others about the Lakers coming out recently, there's been a lot of talk about the greatest and players and teams and NBA history, right? It's a big conversation point among NBA types now. The Heat are too young of a franchise to really carry that sort of history, right? But since their inception, there is little doubt of their success. So here's the question. Since 1989, Miami's first year, which teams have played more finals games than the Miami Heat?
The Lakers. That's it.
That's right. Oh, that's really good. Lakers, 53. Miami has 35. They're tied with the Bulls for 35. Golden State and San Antonio are behind them at 34. Very good.
Yeah. Well, the Bulls went six times, obviously. The Heat have gone six Four. Times as well.
Oh, wait. Six times. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Six times. Yeah. Bubble one notwithstanding. All right. Coming up next, we're going to get to our turning point of the game. And then, of course, our flash bulb moment. One of those moments that just added to Dwayne Wade's legacy that's coming up next here on Locked On Heat. You're hanging out with a few friends and putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. And as the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. But no, you live nearby. You can make it home okay. It's no big deal. What are the odds you get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that can happen? Your insurance goes up? You lose your license? You lose your job? You total your car? You kill somebody? Everyone knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic and often deadly. However, that still doesn't stop everyone from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So, if you think you're okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe and plan ahead to get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or someone else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. Did Dwayne Wade get a friendly whistle in this series, David? It's a great question. It's one we're going to tackle later on in the show. But let's get to our turning point of the game. Game 6 of the NBA Finals. What do you have?
There wasn't any. I really don't think there was. I mentioned before. I think the Posey three-pointer, again, kind of gave them a little bit of a cushion. But then they answered back. Udonis's last jumper of the night seemed to, again, give Miami a little bit of a cushion. None of that mattered. Even the missed Terry three-pointer, the missed free throws by Dwayne, there was so much. Like, there were pivotal moments on both sides for both teams. You know, turnovers on both sides, missed free throws, missed shots, whatever you want us to call it. And at the same time, like, great defensive stops and stretches, big shots. I don't think there was anything that necessarily stood out. Like, I know we'll talk about this as well, but this game felt like it was just a perfect 48 minutes down from wire to wire. I don't know that there was any one moment that stood out to me as, oh, this is it. This is the turning point. Because, again, both teams were in it to the very last second.
I mean, yeah, you could argue that the turning point of the game was Jason Terry's three-pointer at the end not going in, yeah. right? Yeah. Like, that right. was the final shot in the final second there. To talk about that Jason Terry three, because we probably should a little bit more, in my memory, it was a contested shot, kind of a prayer that Jason Terry put up at the very end. D-Wade gets the rebound. Rebound, Wade! The Mike Breen call, and then the rest is history. But watching it again...
Egregious.
It was a wide open look, David. The defense, like Dwayne Wade, misses those free throws that would have put the game away and just disallowed any opportunity for Jason Terry to tie the game or win the game. And instead, he misses both of those. D Wade misses both of those free throws. Miami's defense is a little out of sorts and disorganized. Dallas just comes right down. Jason Terry comes off a screen, a wide open look, and a look, by the way, a shot that he has made over and over and over again over the course of that series, because he could arguably Dallas' best player in that series and making every three-pointer, it seemed like. And he just misses a wide-open three at the very end there. Might have been the turning point. It was wide open.
Oh, okay. Yes, until replays accurately caught Gary Payton pulling nothing but jersey as he's coming off of the screen there. Like, I can understand a perspective, and I hate doing this because screw Dallas. But anyway, like I can totally understand a perspective of a Mavs fan going, oh my God, watching it on replay, I had forgotten how bad it was. It was a totally missed call. Like Peyton has got nothing but jersey. It seemed like Danny Crawford and Steve Javy were all like, no, we want to get the hell out of here. We'd rather go back to Miami or just call it a season because we're done with this whole thing. It was bad. Like I know... Again, last few seconds of a game, maybe you don't let it come down to free throws or anything like that. But he was clearly and absolutely fouled as that three-point shot went up.
Yeah, he would have missed the free throws.
Maybe. He maybe would have missed one. It wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
But to not ever even get the opportunity, that sticks in your craw a little bit.
I get it. But that Haslam travel, though?
Yeah.
That was a little I hate talking about officiating, but it's such a storyline for the 2006 finals, and I understand it, and we do have to talk about it. But yeah, that Haslam travel on the offensive rebound, like who calls that nowadays? Like that's you would never see that called. Like and so whatever. The officiating was really weird. And I don't know it was weird or inconsistent in 2006, but it was sort of stark and weird and inconsistent compared to what we know in 2022, right? Like I made this remark before earlier in this series, but how many 3-second violations were called back then? Was it just because it was relatively newer back then than it is now, so players were just not used to it as much? Yeah. Or was it just something that the refs cared about more versus now where you just sort of just get away with 3 seconds all the time, which you do? And
I think that was it. It's the era of the center, right? Like where it was much more obvious too, because you had these big, huge 7-footers, like the likes of which we don't have in the NBA today, with the exception of Jokic and Embiid. That's really the only two like huge big men that can occupy that kind of space and do so for a prolonged period of time. Other than that, not really all that much. Maybe Brook Lopez. Yeah, I get even Robin Lopez. But again, not too many. Like at that point in time, like it's so much obvious. You see Dampier or Jopp or Shaq even, camping out there for a few seconds. It stands out a little bit more than somebody a little bit more undersized like Bam or something like that.
That's true. Flashball moment of the game. I've got 4.5 minutes left in the third quarter.
Okay.
Dwayne Wade just hits this impossible running right-handed bank shot layup.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember it, but it was just, I saw it happen and I was just like, holy smokes. And it's not that it was even unique for Dwayne Wade.
I hope you actually said holy smokes when you said it too.
I was like, holy smokes. Yeah, just to myself in my apartment.
Golly gee willikers, that was a heck of a jumper.
Yeah, I was trying not to curse. it's just one of those things that back then, three things watching this series really stood out to me about Dwayne Wade's game, and it's why the James Harden comparisons are ridiculous. And everybody says that D Wade inspired James Harden with the foul baiting and all this stuff, and that they're very similar and all these things and whatever. I don't even want to go down that road. I'll say this though about D Wade that made him unique from James Harden and from not to just keep throwing James Harden a bunch of guards, especially the guards that play in today's game, who just by nature of today's high pick and roll basically offense, you're just on the ball so much. Dwayne Wade was so good at cutting and moving off the ball, even back then. And I know that was a storyline when he decided to come off the ball after the being on the ball so much in 2008 and 2009, and then LeBron comes in 2010, and then in 2011 he decides to play off the ball a little bit more. He had already done that playing next to Shaq, cutting, moving, and all these things. So it's pretty remarkable how he's good at that. But also just the shooting on the move, too. Coming off of the screen, a leaning jumper fadeaway here, just contorting his body in the middle of the lane there. And then just like I said, this crazy circus right-handed bank shot layup thing while running out of bounds basically in the third quarter. And he just makes it happen. His body control is just the cutting is one of probably his most underrated skills, but the body control is right up there, I think.
No, 100%. Even when he was on the catch too, like, you know, let's say Jason Williams or Peyton has the ball and they shoot it over to him. He's like, he catches it and he's immediately on the move. Like the speed, the ability to just take it and go. We don't remember that aspect of his, you know, because again, towards the end of his career, or even in the middle of it, like with the Big Three era, that wasn't the strength of his game, nor was he asked to do so much. Like he had it on occasion, but not as consistently as this, just constantly moving.
One of the biggest what ifs, I think, in NBA history could be like, what if Dwayne Wade got the right surgery while he was at Marquette? Because his knee clearly eroded to the point of like in the middle of the Big Three era, the knee was gone. It was shot. Like, he just clearly wasn't the same athlete. And you watch him now, and you're right. He's almost already in his first step before he even has the ball. I don't even know how to explain it, right? It's just so quick.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows it's coming. One of the great nicknames ever given,
one of the greatest nicknames ever given by another player to another player was Flash. I had forgotten that Shaq had given him that nickname for some reason.
Well, Flash to my Superman, right?
So exactly.
Wade moment there was at the start of the fourth quarter after another ridiculous jumper, and he hits it off glass, and he's cutting up along the sideline, and he starts talking to the Mavs fans there, and he says, "Oh, you saw that, huh?" And he smiles, and then like the smile turns like stone cold from one second to another. Like you could tell, like he was just like, it was shades of purple shirt guy. Like it had been a time during social media that it would have been turned into a meme there, because it was this smile, right? This great bright Wade smile, but underneath it is like this deadly assassin layer that he really just wants to tell him. He wants to tell him a lot more colorful language than, "Oh, you saw that, huh?"
It's the Kanye meme, right? Where the camera pans to Kanye in the crowd and he's smiling and it pans to him and he just deadpan.
Deadly
just,
serious.
Oh, nope, I'm in serious Kanye mood now.
Right. It was funny. I didn't know that he had that kind of back and forth with the Dallas crowd. But
a couple times we caught it, right? And even there was a time where, was it this game or in game five, he hits a shot and something happens, and then there's free throws or something, and then he's sort of jawing at Jason Terry while free throws are going on. And there was a lot of trash talking D-Wade's game back then.
Booed constantly by that Mavs crowd, too. I had forgotten that. Obviously, look, like he was so strong in those middle three games of the series, and the free throw disparity or whatever. But like in the game six, like he was booed pretty frequently. And when he was accepting the Finals MVP trophy, there rained down boos on him and David Stern. It was hilarious.
He wouldn't have it any other way, I'm sure.
Oh,
let's quickly do our Bang and Brown segment, the segment where we talk about the broadcast, and this one's gonna be. This might be my favorite one we've done this whole time.
Okay.
Jason Terry basically admitting to the broadcast that the Mavericks did not deserve to win. Here's the clip.
Told guys that if you can't win two games on your home court in the NBA Finals, then you don't deserve to win a championship. So that's what it is for us. But you can't get to two without getting one.
There you have it. Straight from Jason Terry's mouth. If you can't win two at home, man, you're not the best team. You don't deserve to win. Hey, you couldn't even win one at home. You didn't deserve to win.
That's a pretty strong one too. I also liked Hubie explaining like the minutia of what to do down to the second, like in foul situations as the game was coming to an end there, like just like the different scenarios, how to handle this with like the shot clock winding down or the game clock winding down. Like it was just pure Hubie. He was fantastic. He was great.
We have given Hubie Brown his flowers and as much praise as possible. Just heaving it on to Hubie Brown. He can't even get out from underneath all the praise that we have put onto
literal
him.
Literal truckloads of flowers dumped on Hubie Brown.
Dumped on Hubie Brown. what would the broadcast have been like had it been Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson at the end there? Instead of, like you said, Hubie Brown masterfully and expertly and clearly explaining what was happening, instead it would have been JVG complaining about which foul call, the Gary Payton one or the Udonis Haslem travel.
Like, oh, that's a foul.
I just don't know why these days, like, you just can't be in the lane for 3 seconds as long as you want to. Oh. Like, they're taking away the post players.
Mark Jackson saying, well, I don't know why Jason Terry's taking that shot. You give it to Dirk. He's the one who got you there. You give him the ball. And then seeing it go into Jason Terry. Like, I mean, that would have been classic Mark Jackson, like predicting something that goes completely in the opposite direction.
Right. Who gets the ball here? Who gets the ball here, Mark? Well, you got to
Clearly Dirk Nowitzki. He's your superstar.
You got to give it to Dirk.
Ball Jason Terry right to Jason off of pick Terry. And roll. horrible. Like, it was so good. It was so, like finely tuned machine. Like, just the two of them playing off of each other. Like, no extraneous noise, no BS complaints or anything like that. Like, even when there was something egregious, like, oh, a good reason to complain. That's it. That's it. That's Hubie bickering with referees, you know, at this point in his career. He's just like, oh, he's got a reason to feel upset about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. And you know what? This is the only finals they ever did together.
Why? What is wrong with ABC?
Hubie Brown gets moved down to the second broadcast. They move up JVG and Mark Jackson the next year into the finals next to Mike Breen. This was Mike Breen's
Jackson
first
have
time doing
on somebody? What photos Mark of Jackson ABC executives are in Mark Jackson safe at home, right? I don't know. Something.
I think Ethan Strauss wrote about this on his Substack. There's something about Mark. Like, there is literally like a Mark Jackson. I don't know if it's like a blackmail game, but
that's funny.
If a subscriber to his Substack, there's something there in the archives. I remember reading it. all right. Where does this game rank and how angry is Mark Cuban truly? We'll get to that next here on Locked On Heat. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your betting needs. Find all of your favorite sports and events at the number one online source for odds, lines, and games. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. And now that we have the schedule starting to leak out a little bit, we have some bets. We have some lines. From the early NBA schedule, opening night, October 18th, Lakers at Warriors. Warriors favored by 6.5 points. That seems low to me, honestly. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen to Lakers. Are they getting Kyrie? I don't know, but 6.5 seems low. In Golden State, I'm taking the Warriors on that. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports wagering information. From live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts, they have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the action happening today. BetOnline, where the game starts. We are wrapping up our 2006 NBA Finals rewatch here on Locked On Heat. If you missed any of the episodes or our interview with Antoine Walker or Eric Spoelstra's comments about Dwayne Wade and his masterpiece Game 5, go ahead and check that out. It's up in your podcast feed. It's up on the YouTube channel. We have on YouTube an entire playlist dedicated to this series. So this is evergreen kind of content, right? You can always go back and check this out. And we do recommend that you do so. And tell friends who care about this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Where does this game rank in the series, David?
Number one. Yeah. Number one, I think. Just the back and forth of it. It's up there. I think the last game was up there, too. Just the fact that it had been so close in Miami, and then Miami for them to be able to take that 3-2 series lead. But this one, absolutely. Like, just the back and forth, the game of runs, as cliche as that sounds, this really was. You know, Dallas started off hot, Miami came back, then Dallas came back, and so on and so forth. And just that fourth quarter was just a blur. Like, there was just so much going on with so many different people contributing at so many different times. To me, it was clearly the best game of the series. Where about you?
I'm with you. It's in a universe, a different universe than the rest of these games. And not that the rest of the games were bad. It's just this was one of, I would put this up with a lot of finals games, not just in this series, right? Like over the last 20 years, like this was one of the better finals games because we couldn't even come up with a turning point. The turning point was the end of the game. Like, oh, I guess the Heat win, right? Like, who knows? If this game goes another 60 seconds, I don't know who wins this game, you know? And it's just, it was just one of those kinds of games. And, you know,
had Terry hit that shot, like, I mean, let's say he doesn't get the foul call on Gary Payton, but let's say he hits that shot and they go into overtime. Do you have any faith that Miami pulls it off? I'm not entirely sure. Like,
it's 50-50 to me. It's 50-50 to me. Yeah. And at that point, I kept waiting for Dallas's sort of desperation to kick in. And I'm not saying it did not.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it really did 100% either. Yeah. And
it was Dirk. I think it was. I think that's the turning point. Like in Miami, for Miami, in key moments during those first, you know, the four games that they won, there was always Dwayne. And it's not a knock on Dirk because eventually he got his ring and he was, you know, one of the best players in NBA history without a doubt. Having said that, like, this was the lingering memory for me, is that Dirk quote-unquote choked or didn't come up big in these moments. And yes, there were plenty of that. Like, he just was not impactful in the way he needed to be as the star of the team. Right. It was up to guys like Terry to step up, or even, strangely enough, Jerry Stackhouse as a sixth man, Josh Howard. Like, those are your big scores in the fourth quarter of a game that you have to win in order to keep your season alive. I mean, that's just weird.
The Mark Cuban angry scale, 1 to 5, we had it somewhere in the 4 range, you and I, after game 5. Where is it now?
Mm-hmm. It's 6, I think. I think frustration, anger, clearly, like, cheering on the Dallas crowd there to boo for Dwayne in the waning moments of the game. And then, I've got to say, I don't know if you watched the entire trophy presentation speech, right? Like, Mark Cuban attempting to clap. Like, are we entirely sure that Mark is human and born on this planet? Because, like, those two hands had never been joined in a way like a clap before. Like, I don't even want to simulate it, because it was just like,
he's used to having flippers on Shark Tank. Like, he's just like this, he's transformed into his human form. Like, he doesn't know how to use his opposable thumbs.
If you explain clapping to an alien with fins, this is what you'd get. Right. Mark Cuban. Yeah.
Get Mark Cuban. Fins in a cereal box head.
I love you, Mark.
Mark Cuban, Android. Has Dwayne Wade yet achieved legendary status? We had it at a yes after game 5. So just yes, underlined, bold, typeface, game 6. Yes, he's a legend now.
No doubt.
Okay. All right. So now we're going to get to our biggest lingering question. 16 years later, this 2006 NBA Finals still has sort of a lore around it. Big question marks around it, not just for Dallas fans, not just for Miami fans, but for the league in general. People will look back on this. You hear guys like Bill Simmons saying, you know what, the officiating was an atrocity in that series. Not that I don't think Bill Simmons cares one way or another whether or not the Mavericks or the Heat win. He's a Celtics guy. I don't think that they care. But, people wonder about that. So let's talk about it. Our first lingering question. Did Dwayne Wade get a friendly whistle, David?
Yes. Not as badly as everybody makes it seem. And I think the numbers even on this game are kind of skewed by the fact that he was getting fouled in the waning moments of the game when they were trying to foul him on purpose. So that's why he took these incredible... Yeah,
Those away. I have that number. Right. Take those away. He attempted 15 free throws in the game. Still a lot, but not like this crazy, egregious, historic amount that we're talking about almost 2 decades later.
I saw 2 calls, I think one by Devin Harris in the first quarter and another one late in the game that was like, okay, I don't know that he actually even touched him. Yeah, exactly. And Hubie calls him out. Shout out Hubie. That was it. Other than that, it was like, you know what? He's getting hit. Like, he's driving to the lane and Dirk cuts him across the arm or fouls him in the body. Like, this is just the case. And as I said before, and I've been saying throughout this whole rewatch, he's just a step faster than everybody else. They can't keep up with him and they have no recourse but to foul him in some way. And so, I don't think he did get a friendly whistle towards the end. I'll say this though. No flopping, except for one time where he was kind of pushed out of bounds by Marquise Daniel on a free throw attempt. Other than that, or a rebound, I can't remember exactly which. Either way, I don't see much flopping from Dwayne. I saw a whole hell of a lot more from Devin Harris and even Marquise Daniel. Like throwing the head back a la Jeremy Lin and Kemba Walker in that playoff series against the Charlotte Hornets a few years ago. Yeah. Like, that's what it reminded me of. Like, they were anticipating this. Even at one point, Hubie says, great anticipation from Daniels, I think, on a drive from Dwayne Wade. It's like, it's anticipation. He got there, but he also threw himself back as soon as there was, like, minimal contact. Like, he was already falling before Wade even launched into him. So, I don't think it was a particularly bad, egregious whistle in Dwayne's favor.
Yeah, not just this game, but in the series. I obviously am not completely unbiased in this, but I tried to be as objective as possible in watching this. I tried to be as objective as possible, and Dwayne Wade got some star whistles, definitely got some star calls, but I don't think it was this conspiracy to anoint him as the next Michael Jordan. I really don't. I didn't see anything that led me to believe that. I saw the same in regards to game 6, the same kind of ticky-tack ones that were questionable that you did, and I took notes on those. But I will also say this about the series overall. There were a lot of foul calls. Like, the officiating was rather heavy-handed throughout the entire six games, not just giving Dwayne Wade foul shots at the line, but just overall. Like, we already mentioned the 3 second violations, but like, they called carries in the NBA finals. They were calling traveling more than I've ever seen. They were calling a lot of stuff, moving screens, offensive stuff like that.
What, three or four point plays, I think, also called during the whole series.
It was a pretty heavy handed officiating job, I think. And that's maybe, and so when you have so, like, just this rate of whistles happening, you're going to get a couple of questionable ones. And some of them are going to be favoring Dwayne Wade. Some of them are going to be favoring Harris. Some of them will be favoring Marquise Daniels. Like, it's just, that's not all of them are going to be awesome, right? And so that's just the way it is.
Think about Dallas's like offense, like Terry popping from the 3 point line, or even his floater in the paint. Like, he's not drawing contact there. Howard's not drawing that much contact. Nowitzki with a fadeaway. Sometimes he's getting fouled, but more often than not, you know, it's just, they weren't, Stackhouse was getting his calls because he's, you know, kind of drive to the rim sort of guy, although not as much at this point in his career. It's just a different style. Like, they were fouling Shaq on purpose.
Was getting foul shots all series long, or all playoffs long, and then he stopped going to the rim in this series because, I don't know, Shaq and Alonzo Mourning were there, and Miami's defense, I guess, stopped him or whatever. But Udonis Haslam, James Posey defended him well. You're right. That's the other thing about this is the Heat's whole thing is, hey, we're going to put a big man on the floor. We're going to get Dwayne Wade to the basket, and we're going to just put pressure on the rim as much as possible, where Dallas was a little bit more finesse, a little bit, hey, let's force turnovers, get out in transition, shoot threes and all these things. And you're going to get more foul calls. But like, this was perfectly in line with what the Heat and what Dwayne Wade had been doing the entire playoffs and all season. Like, Dwayne Wade, like, his whole thing was getting to the free throw line. It's not as if it'd be one thing if he just never got to the line and then in this finals was getting to the line 20 times a game. Like that, he was sort of doing this all the time. All right. So we put that one to bed. Next question. Was Alonzo Mourning really better than Shaquille O'Neal? Because this was one of the things that I was so interested in discussing and observing, because that has been sort of the narrative bent since the 2006 finals was, Alonzo Mourning just outplayed Shaq. And without Zoe, the Heat don't win the finals. Was he really better than Shaq? And I got some numbers for you here. Shaquille O'Neal in this series, 82 points, 61 rebounds, 17 assists, 5 blocks. Alonzo Mourning in this series, 26 points, 19 rebounds, 0 assists, which seems impossible, but I guess that's true.
No, that seems very possible.
9 blocks. And I think half of them were in this game six.
Five in game six,
So... Alonzo Mourning also played, this is worth mentioning, 66 minutes compared to Shaq, who played 211 minutes.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I don't think he was better. I think I saw some vindication of Shaquille O'Neal in key moments there, because we kind of forget what a brilliant passer he was from the center position, because he was so powerful and able to just, you know, drop step his way into an easy basket and things of that sort. And so... I think we kind of had forgotten that, conveniently enough, but he was the hub of the offense. And we saw how it shifted over the course of the series, where they were running everything through him in the low post and then eventually kind of evolved the spaces in the floor a little bit more, putting in Dwayne's hands, et cetera. I just think that Zoe's minutes were so impactful, too. Like, he played significantly less, as you pointed out. But when he was out there, especially in this game, like, he was a non-factor. We talked about this. Like, he was just zero out there in game one and two, I think.
Yeah,
and then eventually
the series.
And then in Miami, kind of started finding his groove a little bit. Those summer groove, to say. And then he was great in game six. Like, those 5 blocks, every one of them was.
He got better as the series went on too. Game five, he was big.
Yep.
And maybe that's why people remember it that way. Is because those were sort of the biggest. Those are the signature games of this series, and he was so important. He was very important in the series. I don't mean to diminish his importance in the series.
Absolutely, I don't know
that the Heat win this series without Alonzo Mourning, but I don't think that he outplayed Shaq. Shaq had his moments. It's sort of like that starting quarterback mentality. You always expect your starting quarterback to make every pass and never throw an interception and throw 3 touchdowns a game. But the backup quarterback comes in and you're like, wow, this guy can actually complete a couple passes. And it's just, the bar is so much lower for that player. And the same goes for Alonzo Mourning. Like, the bar was lower. When Alonzo Mourning isn't doing anything, you don't really care, because he's not really supposed to do anything. He's your backup center. But then when he does do stuff, it's a little bit louder and you take more notice of it. Or with Shaq, it's just the expectation. And I think that's part of it. I think both of them had their moments. Fortunately for Miami, I think their moments didn't really overlap. games where Alonzo wasn't playing very well, Shaq did, and vice versa. And so I think that's part of the reason why they won. It was a two-headed monster, I think, at the center spot, and they needed both.
Yeah. I found it interesting how the broadcasting crew kept referring to Zoe as the best backup center in the league. And I don't think it was just based on his reputation. Like, we saw moments there. I mean, Hubie in particular really just loved Alonzo's effort and defense and everything else. And in that game six, I think this is what stands out, is that we never really saw this incredible effort. Like, we saw Shaq dive to the floor, but like, Alonzo just found ways to stretch himself to proportions he had not ever done in order to block a shot. And it was just like, you saw him demoralize Dallas's offensive attempts because he was such a force in the paint.
It was cool to see him do that, to your point. Like, this is the last sort of gasp of his career. Oh, and he had played for Miami so many playoff series, so close, so many times. And you could just tell it wasn't up to him about whether or not the Heat won this series. That was clearly up to Dwayne Wade. But he was going to do whatever he could to help prop up Dwayne Wade and give him the best chance possible. Our next question. Did the Mavericks and did Dirk Nowitzki choke? Because that's another thing. And that's sort of more with Dirk, kind of the narrative that surrounded him up until he eventually won, knocking off the Heat in 2011, that he just didn't have it in these final series. Do you think he choked in this series?
That's kind of harsh, because you can't really ever just pin in a one person. As much as I pointed out, and I just talked about this, Dirk struggling, especially in the fourth quarter, like, I don't know that he necessarily choked the whole series away. I don't know that the Mavs choked it either. Like, Miami just played differently, better, and then Dwayne just took it to a whole other level in games 3, 4, 5, and even 6. And I think that was a huge difference. And they figured something out. I think if I had to give credit where it's due, maybe credit cookies, shout out them. I'd say the Heat get like 65% of the credit for winning the series, and Dallas gets 35% of the blame for blowing it. Because I mean, you're up two, you got a little complacent, but at the same time, like, you should be able to carry over what you did well in Dallas, and to lose it at home too, that's particularly tough.
I hate doing this. He choked a little bit.
You did? I mean,
the 39% shooting overall, 25% from three-point range. This is a guy that was in the MVP conversation. A guy who basically dragged the Dallas Mavericks to a great season and to the finals. Not saying that Jason Terry and all these other guys weren't awesome that year, but Dirk Nowitzki was one of the star players in the league. And to shoot 39% overall in the series and 25% from three-point range, it wasn't what you needed from him. It wasn't what he went toe to toe with Dwayne Wade, and he got boxed right out of the ring. And I don't know. Yeah, you want to give credit to Miami's defense, but you know, James Posey, Udonis Haslam, like, they're good defenders. But you're Dirk Nowitzki. If you're a star, it's not really supposed to matter who's defending you, right? Like, we kept talking about a couple years ago, PJ Tucker guarded Kevin Durant really well. Well, Kevin Durant shot 50% and scored 30 points a game in that series, but PJ Tucker tried really hard. That's what that's supposed to look like. Not to compare Dirk to even Kevin Durant, but he did choke a little bit. That said, I think I'm with you. It is harsh. It is really harsh to put that fully on Dirk. I'm not glad that he beat Miami, but I am glad that he eventually did get a ring. I am. Because he deserved that either. Over his career.
That's gone too far.
All right. I've gone too far.
It would have been better if he'd won against somebody else.
What I'm saying. I'm just trying to compartmentalize here. All right. Final question here. Final lingering question, and it's a doozy here, David. I'm stealing this one from the Rewatchables over at The Ringer. They have this thing called Apex Mountain, and they'll talk about, like, an actor or an actress. Was this the best role he or she ever played? Was this the best moment of his or her career? And we're going to take that, and we're going to apply it to Dwayne Wade. Was this the apex of Dwayne Wade's career? Sounds maybe crazy to say at first. He's in his third season. He wins the finals. Kind of bursts onto the scene. We talk about this the entire series while we've been doing these shows, David. It kind of the whole legend building, the storyboarding of sort of his life, his sort of origin story, and what he is right now and what he is going to be. So much of this broadcast was based on what Dwayne Wade is going to be and where he is going and how he's one of the bright young stars in the league and what happens next with him. And yet, I think there's a pretty good argument to make that this was the peak of Dwayne Wade's career.
You know, you mentioned that you were going to ask this, and it's not like I was thinking about it throughout our show here, but now when you put it in that context, like, I was thinking in terms of, like, do you separate great individual production versus team success? etc. But this had elements of both. Not only was he by far the best player on the floor individually, but it also led to a championship, the ultimate team goal. So having said that, like the next couple of seasons marred by injury at first, then playing at an MVP level during 2008 through 2010, but accomplishing nothing.
Right.
Like those feel like empty stats, right? Yeah. And certainly when you're thinking in context of his whole career and his legacy, and even then the back seat that he had to take, yes, he played fantastic the 2011 NBA Finals, should have gotten another ring. That's a whole other conversation. Having said that, like he is not thought of as being the same great player during the Big Three era that he was at this point in time. And so I think it is. I think it really is. Like when you think about Dwayne Wade, and you think about the breadth of his career, it probably boils down to this one singular point. This is what you think of, like him standing there, tossing the ball up, you know, just having these incredible moments throughout this whole final series and winning a championship, like the ultimate goal in his third season. That's what it's all about. And from that point forward, like if he had never won another ring, I don't know that he'd be remembered as an all-time great, but he'd still be remembered as a really, really great player. And that should be enough. So I think, yeah, from this kind of carved out the rest of his legacy pretty clearly.
It is a signature series win. It's a signature moment of his entire career. You're right. This is paragraph one of the Hall of Fame inductee, you know, speech. This is it. and obviously great moments through the rest of his career, right? Just, you could go to the, this is my house thing, the against the Bulls with that shot at the end, the steal and the shot at the end there. Which was also just sort of another signature moment of his. You could go to him going from Converse to Nike to establishing his thing with Leaning, like all that stuff off the court. Obviously, the Big Three era and just how loud and important that was in NBA history. And then even after LeBron leaves he leaves and then he comes back and we get that entire stretch. And then the retirement tour that was just phenomenal and fun and interesting. And I know you and I disagree on that. But it's like I do think – okay, coming off of these 2006 finals and his performance here, he had the NBA in the palm of his hand. It was his league. It was his league. And I don't think that was debatable at that point, right? And so he never had it in his hands quite like that again. Even though he was scoring 30 points a game in 2008, MVP kind of seasons, his team stunk. So he didn't have the league at the palm of his hands. In during the Big Three era, that was 80% about LeBron James. Like, all of it was about LeBron and the decision that he had made to come to Miami in the first place. It was all LeBron. It was all LeBron legacy making was the Big Three era. Dwayne Wade had already made his legacy by the time that LeBron came to Miami in 2010, right? And so he had never run the NBA, controlled the NBA, been head honcho in the NBA the way that he was between the summer of 2006 and going into the season of 2007. That was it, man. Like this was, I think, the apex of Dwayne Wade's career, and it means that doesn't mean I'm taking anything away from the rest of his career, but this was the absolute peak apex.
Yeah, I don't think it's not that tough a question. It's not that you know, crazy an answer. You know, when you put it all together like this, you know, yes, certainly the stardom was there, but like he maybe for the last time seen as having something better than LeBron too, you know, like like he was of that vaunted 2003 draft class when you were still talking about Carmelo Anthony in glorified terms and LeBron was the anointed one so early, and then Dwayne is like, well, none of that matters because he's like, he's on another level and he's all actually won something. He's won a championship too, and while LeBron would go into the finals next season, obviously he wouldn't win a ring until 2012, and I think that's just, you know, it's just impossible there
It doesn't mean that he didn't get better. Like, this isn't the best version of Dwayne Wade. We should clarify that for listeners. Like, Dwayne Wade got better. There was a better versions of Dwayne Wade over the next 5 years, basically.
But led to nothing. Yeah.
But led to nothing. For what, really? And that's another big what if.
Thank you, Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah, that's another podcast for another time, I suppose. the big Jermaine O'Neal apology podcast. All right. Well, that's our 2006 NBA Finals rewatch. That was a lot of fun, David. That was a lot of fun. Well, you and I have sort of talked about this idea for a couple of years now about doing this. We finally kind of carved out the time.
Yes, absolutely a lot of fun. Like, I'm so glad I got a chance to just to rewatch it and to be able to do this. And I have to say, like, I know it boils down to like off-season content and stuff like this, but it's also just in context of like the Heat franchise, like so much is on the line. Like even during the award ceremony at the end there, like Dan Patrick asking Pat Riley, it's like, oh, did you have doubts when you took over the team? You Benedict Arnold, son of a bitch. Like the fact that you, like they want to crucify Pat there for firing Stan Van Gundy, like at the biggest moment of the series, but he just won a championship. It's like, can we not with the drama right now? Like, it's just funny. Like, and we talked about this the whole series, like the fact that their season seemed doomed, like it not only did it establish Shaq, or not establish him, but also kind of like helped him in terms of like this fourth championship that he won out of spite, just so he could say this one means more because I did it with Dwayne and not with Kobe, etc. Like, so much was riding for this. Like for Pat, like all those years where he coached his team and never got them to the championship, to do it now, albeit on, you know, on the corpse of Stan Van Gundy, apparently. Like, you know, we just talked about Dwayne's legacy, but all these other players, like so much riding on this. And I know
GP
a lot of that
getting the ring, like all this.
Yes, Alonzo, those great All Star. Like, is he in the Hall of Fame? Yeah. If he doesn't get the 2006 ring, I don't think he's. I don't think he does. A lot here. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Last question I had for you, and this is a surprise one, the one that I want to have the show on. Who had a better series, Dwayne Wade or Hubie Brown?
Hubie Brown.
The GOAT. That's the answer.
The GOAT, right there. I don't know what he was doing in Dallas, but man, I'm sure he hope he had a great time. I hope he partied with the Heat. I hope we see like shots of him like partying with the Heat somewhere in 2006. That would be classic.
Anybody listening that may have a photo of Hubie Brown doing a keg stand with Dwayne Wade in the hottest Dallas nightclub, please send it our way.
Yeah, Hubie Brown and Posey and Antoine at a strip club in Dallas. There's got to be something in Dallas-Fort Worth. I mean, I don't know.
They probably have a strip club in Dallas that's named like Strip Club, and it's just strip steaks. And strippers, right? Just like big hunks of meat and gallon hats and strippers. I think that's a really good idea. If that doesn't exist,
I'm trademarking opportunity.
That. Yeah, yeah. And if you do exist, please sponsor the show.
Absolutely.
Lockdown Heat, thank you so much. Reach out to us, lockdownheat@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and on Instagram @LockedOnHeat. That's it for us today. And that wraps up the 2006 NBA Finals rewatch. Thanks so much for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.